Okay, we're on the 6 p.m. agenda item. Pat Sheet is going to deliver a presentation on a notice of intent from the agency, if I have it right, on TEDS. So take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The presentation I'm going to be going through is, I think it's document number 2 behind tab 1 in your books. I'm going to be giving an update on our on an initiative regarding trawl gear and sea turtle conservation. And we have a scheduled scoping meeting for this evening here at from 7 to 9, and I'll be doing I'll get into some of the alternatives that we're considering a little bit more then, but I'll try and go through them as well today. Just briefly go over what I'm going to talk about. Just going to give a little bit of background on the ESA and sea turtles and talk about our sea turtle strategy. I'm going to go over an advance notice of proposed rulemaking that was put out in 2007, and then also the notice of intent to prepare an EIS and conduct public scoping meetings that was published this past May, and then talk about some future actions. And the scoping document and I believe the Federal Register notice are, I think, extra copies are also on the table in the room outside there, and I think they were also included in your books. So listed sea turtles. There are 6 species of ESA-listed sea turtles in U.S. waters, and the ones we're mainly concerned about in the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast are leatherbacks, Kemp's Ridleys, and loggerheads, and to a lesser degree, green turtles. There are a number of different measures in place in the U.S. to protect sea turtles from fisheries interactions. Just put a bunch of them up on the next 2 slides here. I'll mention a few that are more relevant to us. There are gill net restrictions in North Carolina. There are requirements to use turtle excluded devices in shrimp trawl fisheries and summer flounder fisheries south of the Virginia-North Carolina border. The bottom one there, there's a requirement to use chain mats in the Atlantic sea scallop dredge fishery, I'm sure folks are familiar with. There's a modified pound net leader requirement in the Virginia part of the Chesapeake Bay. Again, there's some gear restrictions in the Mid-Atlantic for gill nets, and then there's several measures for the pelagic longline fishery. Sea turtle status. In 2007, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and NIMS, we actually share jurisdiction for sea turtles, issued 5-year reviews for all listed species and recommended no changes in the current listings, but it also did recommend full status reviews be undertaken to review the species under the distinct population segment policy, which basically means that right now the turtle species are listed under the ESA worldwide, their entire species range. The distinct population segment policy would allow a subspecies or a specific segment of the overall species to be listed, perhaps the West Atlantic population of loggerhead sea turtles. And there is actually a review underway, full status review underway for loggerhead sea turtles, and I'll talk about that again in a sec. There was also recovery plan issued in late in 2008 for the West Atlantic population of loggerhead sea turtles. A little on sea turtle status. The chart on the right shows some nest counts for loggerheads on Florida index beaches, and just shows the recent trend has been declining, but in 2008 was a better year. And in 2007, we were petitioned to designate critical habitat for leatherback sea turtles on the west coast of the U.S. And also in 2007, we received a petition to designate the Northwest Atlantic loggerhead as well as the North Pacific loggerhead as distinct population segments, as I mentioned, under the ESA, and to reclassify them as endangered from threatened. The Atlantic and Gulf of Mexico sea turtle strategy. This is something that was initiated in the agency several years ago, and it's meant to be a comprehensive, integrated approach to address sea turtle bycatch in both state and federal fisheries. And this is meant to be a change instead of how we usually look at things through Section 7 of the ESA, where we go kind of FMP by FMP. And the purpose of the strategy is to, of course, conserve and recover sea turtles consistent with the ESA, to evaluate fisheries and sea turtle bycatch in a comprehensive manner, and also to authorize sea turtle takes consistent with the ESA. And there's a definition of take on the screen, but part of the one of the problems is that sea turtle takes in state fisheries, we can't, those takes are illegal in the sense that we can't cover them under a Section 7 consultation like we do for federal fisheries. So if by issuing regulations is one way for us to cover those takes in state fisheries. Some key elements of the strategy that over the last several years we've done a lot of work characterizing state and federal fisheries in the Atlantic and Gulf of Mexico. We've evaluated and prioritized gear types. We've analyzed existing information on the regulations, sea turtle distribution, fishing effort, sea surface temperature, bycatch, strandings, just anything that was available we tried to take a look at. We've been developing and testing some gear modifications. We've improved some of our bycatch monitoring, and we've developed and implemented some solutions to address bycatch. A little on the ESA. Section 9 is what prohibits the taking of any listed species, and that prohibition applies to both intentional takes, such as for scientific research, and also for incidental takes, such as bycatch in fishing operations. Section 7A1 of the Act is what requires the Secretary, in this case, Secretary of Interior or Commerce, to utilize his or her programs in furtherance of the purposes of the Act, so to conserve and recover listed species. And it also includes a part on other federal agencies that they shall, with the assistance of the Secretary, utilize their authorities to further the purposes of the Act. Section 7A2 is the section that talks about what we see in Section 7 consultations, where federal agencies shall ensure that their actions are not likely to jeopardize the continued existence of any listed species, and that's where their consultation requirements come in. How are actions exempted from this take prohibition? Well, after we go through a Section 7 consultation, we can, and we find that the action will not cause jeopardy, we can issue an incidental take statement, which exempts the takes that are associated with that action, such as a fishery. And the incidental take statement specifies the impact of the take. It also specifies reasonable and prudent measures to minimize the impact of that take, and it sets forth terms and conditions to implement the reasonable and prudent measures. Action takes can also be exempted through Section 10, which talks about permits, through scientific research permits, and through incidental take permits. And those are for otherwise legal actions, such as activities conducted by states or private entities. And takes can also be authorized when we issue protective regulations, so such as we did in the Virginia pound net fishery, which is a state fishery, which does not have Section 7 consultation requirements. We issued regulations for that fishery, and we're able to make those takes that do still occur. Those are legal. The sea turtle strategy seeks to reduce bycatch, bycatching gear, like I mentioned before, and we've gone through a prioritization of various gear types, and those that we've put in the higher priority include the trawls, gill nets, pots and traps, as well as hook and line and long line. And the first gear that we're looking at is trawl gear. Our Science Center has done some estimates recently for trawl gear for loggerhead sea turtles, and an estimate issued back in 2006 was that the average annual bycatch of loggerheads in the mid-Atlantic from 96 to 2004 was about 615 animals. And then there's also a separate estimate for the scallop trawl fishery, which is about 135. So those are some of the estimates that we have of loggerhead bycatch. Now, when in thinking about how to address some of the bycatch issues in trawls, one thing that we've considered is doing some phasing of some protective regulations. And so an initial thought we had was to break those fisheries down into different phases. And phase one is the summer flounder fishery, sea scallop, trawl fishery, whelk, calico scallops, and the fly net fisheries for croaker and weakfish. And then the phase two and phase three fisheries, phase two and phase three would address those at a later date, that we would look at the phase one fisheries first. We issued a advance notice of proposed rulemaking in February of 2007. It's open for 90 days of public comment. We received 165 comments, and this is where we announced plans to consider expansion of TED requirements in several new fisheries. And this is where we talked about some of those fisheries in phase one, fly net, whelk, scallop, summer flounder, and potentially others. Now, this past May, we announced an intent to a notice of intent to prepare an EIS for the Atlantic for this initiative, and to conduct public scoping meetings. And there are several groups of alternatives that are discussed in the notice of intent and more in the scoping document. And there's, of course, the status quo, which we have to consider. And then there's the temporal and spatial application of the rule, so where and when. And then also which fisheries to include in the rule. And those are, we could just include, there's several alternatives discussed. One is to include those phase one fisheries. One is to include all trawl fisheries at once. And then one is then some other prioritization of which ones to include in a phased approach. Then the last part of it is what would actually be required, what we call the fishery operations alternatives. So would they be, for whatever fisheries and where and when we select, what is required? Would it be turtle excluded device requirements, closures for those areas, tow times? So what would actually be required in those times and areas and fisheries? I'm going to go through and show the spatial and temporal alternatives, because I think those are probably a little bit, you kind of need to maybe see them a little bit, and then which fisheries I've already talked about a little bit, and then what would be required as well. So one of the spatial alternatives is basically south of a line, kind of going east from the southern part of Cape Cod there, similar to a line that we have for the chain mat requirements in the scallop dredge fishery. So that's would be south of that line would be the area that it would be required. A second alternative that we have is the entire EZ, so going up north from the main Canada border, again encompassing the whole east coast of the U.S. and including the Gulf of Mexico. Another alternative that we're looking at is taking more of a diagonal line southeast from Cape Cod, and while the initial line, or the line that I showed on the previous slide, this one here, kind of would cover the some of the southern edge of Georgia's Bank, this one here is tries to get a more of a cutoff between Georgia's Bank and the Mid-Atlantic fisheries, so and the Mid-Atlantic area. The temporal alternatives, and that's a little small for me to see. So, there's a couple that I could go through here that we're considering, and this first one here, I think in that northernmost area, is May 16th through November 30th, and again that's similar to what we have for the scallop chain mat requirements. So that would be in the northernmost area, and then mid-April through mid-December in that next lower area, March through January in the next lower area, and then year-round further south. And then another alternative that we're looking at is less restrictive, and that's going from May 16th through October 31st in the more northern area, April through November, more in the middle, and then year-round further south and around into the Gulf of Mexico. So, and these are meant to, you know, to correspond to sea turtle distribution, as well as some you know, when we've seen strandings, and when we observe sea surface temperatures that are conducive to sea turtles being in the areas. And again, so this is the when and where, and then I also mentioned the fisheries that we're considering, which are back. I'm going to go back a little bit. Sorry about that. And so one option is to do these phase one fisheries, the summer flounder, sea scallop, whelk, calico scallop, and the fly net fisheries. A second option is to do it all at once for all fisheries in the area and times that we've talked about. And a third option is to look at some of the one thing that we talked about is look at some of the bycatch estimates that we have and just prioritize, okay, the fisheries with the highest level of bycatch would be the ones, you know, and set some threshold, 5%, 10%, something like that, and those would be the first group of fisheries we address. And then the final group of alternatives is the what is required. And what we're talking about there are TED use, closures for those areas that we select, and then tow times. Those are the three things that we've talked about as the what would be required. So I'm going to go over the alternatives more in detail tonight at the scoping meeting. So if folks are interested, they could come to that. But I just wanted to go through them quickly here. We've had several scoping meetings already. This is the last scheduled one. We were at the Mid-Atlantic Council meeting in New York a couple weeks ago. And, again, we have a scoping meeting here tonight from 7 to 9. And the scoping period is scheduled to end July 10th. And there's some, you know, contact information there that you could for folks to submit written comments. And that's all I have, and I'll take questions from the council.
Thanks, Pat. Paul Howard.
Pat, you mentioned that the three ways that fisheries could be impacted would be TEDs, closures, or length of tows. In the Gulf of Mexico, where there's a similar program, are there any closed areas in the Gulf of Mexico to protect these turtles? Or are they just the requirement for TEDs?
Yeah, not that I know of. I believe they have TED requirements, and I think at certain times, after storms, certain things like that, they are allowed to use tow time restrictions. But in other fisheries, we do have times and areas where things are closed. But in the Gulf of Mexico for trawls, I think it is mainly TED use.
It is so. Mainly TED. And what is the amount of I heard anecdotally that the amount of takes in the Gulf are like an order of 1,000 to 1 in the Atlantic. What is the order of magnitude with takes for turtles, Gulf compared to what you're trying to do in the Atlantic?
Yeah, the level of take in some of the Gulf and Southeast fisheries is very high. I think in some of the biological opinion for the shrimp fishery, I think the number of takes were in the hundreds of thousands. But also, you got to remember that there's the TED requirements there. So I think it's 97 or 98% survival rate is the estimate. But so there's the take estimates for some of the, particularly the shrimp trawl fishery, is very high.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seems like most of the discussion that we've had here at this council has focused on the scallop fishery and in the mid-Atlantic area. In your what you have as the northernmost area, are there documented takes in the trawl fishery there? And Or is that being chosen as an area because it meets the time and water temperature where there may be turtles?
The answer is kind of yes to both of those questions. There have been takes, north of that. On George's Bank, in trawl gear, not very many. So, and looking at these, and there have definitely been takes on this kind of to the south and west of the line, and also to the east of the line there, the one going diagonally. So, I mean, there are leatherback, sea turtles in the Gulf of Maine all the way up, to Nova Scotia, and they are. Taken in trawls and in other places. So the answer to your question is both. There are takes in those areas, although they definitely are fewer than as you go further north. But part of it is also when we know sea turtles are there and the fisheries overlap. So.
Gaethel's up. Pierce is on deck.
I'll refer you to slide number 15. It's a sea turtle strategy in it. I think my question is kind of a follow-up to Riff's. I don't see dredges on the list. It kind of surprised me. Is there a reason for that? That's the first question.
Just that we've been addressing them separately already.
Okay.
So that's why. Yeah.
And my second question was, you have a list here in priority gears. Is that just one strategy that you'll do trawls first? I mean, is there another strategy that you're going to do all four at once, or are you going to sequentially put everybody's turn in the soup here?
I think when I think it's meant to be somewhat sequential, or after trawls we would concentrate on something else, but that doesn't mean that while we're working on some of the trawl issues, we're not looking at gillnets as well. So I'm not sure. I don't think one of our alternatives for this rule is to include gillnets. This is meant to address trawls. So, so I'm not sure if I answered your question there. So,
well, you did. So at some point here, people who use gillnets, traps, and pots, hook and line, should be aware that you'll be coming after them too. You're just not coming after them at this time. Which brings me to my last question. When it says hook and line, including long line, should the recreational industry be concerned here, or is this just the commercial hook and line?
It's, we're the idea behind the strategy is to be looking at takes, where they happen. So, I don't know if it's as. I know in certain parts of the southern mid-Atlantic and the southeast that there can be quite a bit of interactions with sea turtles and recreational rod and reel, hook and line gear. But so this is not meant to be an exclusively commercial initiative. So
I just want to make sure that everybody's kind of noticed that you know, I mean, people might think that they're somehow exempt from this or something. I just want to make sure everybody is made aware so that they can come to public hearings and comment. I wasn't aware that recreational was an issue here. That's why I asked the question.
Dr. Pearson.
Yeah, Rip asked my question, which was, what database do you use to determine, for example, the need to consider restrictions in, well, the northern area, specifically Nantucket Sound, you know, just south of Cape Cod Bay, south of Cape Cod, you know, north of the islands. So it's based upon actual information for bycatch of turtles, in addition to the thermal regime, I assume, just the anticipation that turtles would be present during that time of the year. Where is the database available for examination? Is it on your website? So we could determine, for example, the nature of the takes, the number of the takes, catches by these different gear types in Nantucket Sound.
The take information for, you know, the information on takes that we have is, you know, our Northeast Center has, you know, has all that information. There's a variety of different information on. You mentioned kind of the oceanographic conditions and things like that, but there's also strandings information as well as sightings, both, you know, surveys that that we've done and as well that have been done, you know, by other groups over the years. And there's several sources of that information that are, I think, publicly available, you know, online. And we've also taken an initiative to put a lot of this information on into a GIS format ourselves. And it's not something that's publicly available, like that where anyone can just go online and look at it, but that is something that we have and is, you know, again, it's not available to the public on a website to look at, but there are, you know, something where we do get requests from folks to see that. So it is all, you know, it's well documented and it is available.
Okay, so in light of what you said, the trawl fishery specifically for fluke that's being looked at right now, your proposals are relevant to that particular fishery. Captures my attention because in our waters we have a very seasonal, highly restricted trawl fishery for fluke in mass waters, Nantucket Sound, Vineyard Sound, in those areas. So I guess you would be advising me to let those fishermen know that they need to pay attention to this because potentially they would be required to use TEDs in their trawl gear when they're pursuing fluke, as well as conch, whelk, because we do have a trawl fishery that would catch whelk in our waters. So that's the advice you're giving us, correct?
Yes, yeah, that during those times and areas that we're talking about, yeah.
Okay, so. Then one final question. You're addressing trawls now, mm-hmm. but you also indicate that other priority gear types include pots. Now, in Nantucket Sound, Vineyard Sound, we have a pot fishery, again, very seasonal for sea bass, for scup. Eventually, when you get to that particular fishery and you address concerns about turtle catch or take by that particular gear, what sorts of restrictions might we anticipate? Are there any restrictions in place right now for pot fisheries elsewhere that we should take a look at so we would know what to anticipate? And that would make us more aware of how we should be dealing with our pot fisheries now in the context of concern about turtles.
Good question. We struggle with that as well. What could you do to minimize? I mean, the bigger issue, especially in the area where you're talking about, is in entanglements of leatherbacks, which happen relatively often. And how to prevent that from happening is not, we haven't obviously figured that out. But we did have a workshop, I believe it was perhaps about a year ago, I think last May or March, where that the we contracted with the University of Rhode Island Sea Grant to have a workshop to talk about the bycatch issues in vertical lines. And so it's something that we're investigating, but right now we don't have a solution. Some people have talked about the top part of the line somehow being more stiff, so to avoid entanglements. I don't think weak links would necessarily work or anything like that. So there's been some discussion about things, but there isn't a solution per se.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple questions about process. You're holding scoping hearings. You're going to develop an EIS and then go back out to public hearing? That's your plan?
That's right. So we'll be back out to the public again for sure. I mean, after we finish the scoping meetings, we'll have to develop our alternatives for analysis in the EIS, select the preferred alternative, and then go out to the public with that again. So,
and do you have a timeline for that, or?
We're hoping to have something public, a draft EIS with the proposed rules sometime in 2010, so sometime next year. So.
Yeah, I have very little experience with TEDs and that sort of thing, and I was just curious if have you done some gear research and looked at impacts to different fisheries and their gear? I mean, when you're going across all trawl fisheries, I mean, there's a variety of gears within that category. Mm-hmm. So,
no, there's some of that going on right now. There's work that's gone on in the fly net fishery off of North Carolina, as well as in the summer flounder fishery in the Mid-Atlantic and the sea scallop fishery in the Mid-Atlantic, and that's work that our science centers has conducted and is continuing to do now, even this spring and summer. So,
because you do wonder about feasibility. I'm sure there's a huge difference between a trawl operating a fishery in North Carolina and one in New England, certainly.
Yeah, it's the operations and also the fish that are caught, and how well they might go through a TED or be deflected out. So target catch loss is one of the things that we're looking at in those studies. So,
and you've identified three phases, and of course one of the alternatives would be to just implement in all of the fisheries that are listed, or to implement in phase one, and then would that include a plan for what happens to phase two and phase three, or that would just be something considered down the road? Or
we've talked about that. What the timing would be with phase two and phase three, and I think it's to me it's somewhat open, because I think we'd have to readdress, well, how well did we address the problem of bycatch and trawls with phase one, and do we need to go back and look at other fisheries and that are still remaining, and perhaps weigh that against do we have what's happening as far as bycatch goes in gillnet fisheries. So I think it's more once we get through this first phase, see, it's a reassessment of where we are with turtle bycatch in both trawl fisheries and others as well. So.
Thank you. And I just was curious how herring fishery, trawl fishery got on the list. I mean, if you look at your maps, the spatial and temporal maps, and if you choose the one that has the line that goes down like this and the one through October, there's almost no interaction spatially with that fishery in that area. So I was just curious of why it would even be on the list.
I think when you're looking at the fisheries, you have to kind of look at the alternatives and kind of almost considering them all at the same time. So one of the spatial alternatives does go all the way up to the main Canada border. So you can't just think, if you just look at the least restrictive spatial alternative, then this fishery doesn't fit. But you have to look at, all of them that occur in that area and time. So you're right, though, that if we select an area and time that isn't where a particular fishery operates, then obviously it's not affected by anything. So,
Paul Howard.
Pat, slide number 7 said there was a petition to list Northwest Atlantic loggerhead as a distinct population and listed as endangered. What has been done with that petition?
Yep. Biological review team has been assembled, and they are working on a status review. Basically, it's a review of the status of the species, and they're actually looking at it at the species worldwide, and looking at the information on genetics, status, et cetera. And they will be finishing their report sometime later on this year, and that will be presented to the agency, or agencies in this case, and then we will make a decision as to whether or not we need to take action on it. So either we could, one of the options is to do nothing and leave the species listed as it is, where it is worldwide. We could decide that there's information that warrants breaking up the worldwide species into several distinct population segments. And then if we were to do that, then you have to make a separate determination for each distinct population segment as to whether it's threatened or endangered. So so the group is working on that status review, and it's supposed to be finished at some point, I think late summer or fall, and then presented back to the agency. So,
but that determination would be based on biology and science, not based on management. In other words, a lot of times we will separate a northern stock and a southern stock, but have different maybe management or tax, but overall we treat them under one umbrella with a total take or a total fishing mortality, but separate management. I'm concerned that if you do it for management, there are huge implications. And where the whole scientific range of the loggerhead might be very healthy, and yet you could draw a management standpoint up here that we have to do a lot more, but don't impact the whole resource. So I think the council's got to be very concerned about this petition to separate it out as a distinct stock that could have huge ramifications.
And if that were to happen, if the agency, again, that goes through a whole, that becomes like a new, that's a new listing action under the ESA, so there would be, a proposed rule, public comment, just so that's a whole separate regulatory process that would happen for that. So.
Doug.
Just a little clarification in your response to Mary Beth's questions. I thought towards the end I heard you say that one of the spatial options goes almost up to the main Canadian border. Which spatial option is that, one?
Yeah, no, again, for this kind of presentation, I kind of abbreviated the images a little bit of them for the maps. So I just scroll through here. This one option is this horizontal line south. Another option is the border. So all the way up to the main Canada border.
So
the third is, however you want to number them. But those are the three options. So basically, if you see this one, and then further north to the, those are the three options, the three spatial areas that were specifically, put in the scoping document. So.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, I'm just curious. Trawl phase one is summer flounder, sea scallop, whelk, calico scallop, and fly net fisheries for croaker and for weakfish. Table 3 in your document shows percent of total assigned. I guess that's percent of total takes by fishery. And I see certainly that the summer flounder fishery slash scup and black sea bass had the highest average annual take of loggerhead, not all turtles, just loggerhead. And so that's 47%. And you mentioned croaker and weakfish. That's 10% and less than 1%. Mackerel, squid, and butterfish is 15%. Why are mackerel, squid, and butterfish not being considered at this time?
The phase one fisheries that we have listed there, they're a kind of a combination of the fisheries that have the higher levels of bycatch, as well as fisheries where we have done some TED work and think we have a potential gear solution. So there's been a lot of work that the Southeast Center has done in the fly net fishery for mostly targeting croaker. So that's one of the reasons why that fishery is there. And for some of the other, particularly some of the higher volume, larger net trawls, there's still some gear development work that may need to be done. So that first phase is kind of a hybrid of the ones with the highest level of bycatch as well as fisheries where we think we've done some gear work. Now the table you were looking at is in the scoping document. It shows a breakdown of loggerhead bycatch kind of by FMP group, and the third alternative that I talked about for which fisheries could be included in a rule was to look at that document there and say, okay, those fisheries with more than 5% or 10% or whatever it is, those would be the ones that we address in this first approach in phase one. So those are that was kind of what I meant as that third alternative. But the first one, phase one, is kind of a mixture of fisheries with the higher bycatch and where we've done some gear research.
Pat, if I could just go back to something Paul Howard asked you about, I guess it's turned the distinct population segment petition that you received. That kind of new to turtles, so bear with me. But is that suggesting that there's some beach somewhere in the North Atlantic that turtles lay eggs? And, you know, what does this mean? Or does this mean that the petitioners want to treat whatever the population of turtles are in the North Atlantic from year to year as a discrete population?
Yeah, it's basically a provision that under the ESA that allows us to, instead of looking at a species, you know, throughout its entire range, you could break it down into distinct population segments. And there's a whole slew of requirements that need to be met for that to happen. They have to be they have to be distinct from one another to put it simply. And right now, loggerheads and all the sea turtles are listed throughout their entire range worldwide. And I think what the biological review team is looking at is not, you know, one of the areas that they're looking at and investigating to be a distinct population segment is the entire Western North Atlantic. So a beach in North Carolina or Florida or anything like that. It's still on a pretty broad scale. So maybe the Mediterranean is a separate, distinct population segment. And once you classify something as a distinct population segment under the Endangered Species Act, it gets treated as a species under the Act. So when you look at an action, a fishery, as to whether or not it's going to, you know, jeopardize a species, you would look at the distinct population segments that it would impact. So I don't know if that answered your question. So that's what they're looking at, to basically see if the worldwide population of loggerheads should be broken down into different pieces because they're relatively separate in terms of breeding, genetics, where, how they migrate. So there's a that's what they're looking at. So.
So if that distinction were made, then is it logical to conclude that, as you termed it, would be a new species under the Act, and therefore there would be a set allowable biological take or impact level that would be unique to the new
we would have
species?
To, we would be looking at, say, when we went through the folks are familiar with what we went through for the sea scallop fishery, where we looked at the takes that were happening in that fishery, and we looked at whether they would jeopardize loggerhead sea turtles. And in the end, we have to make our conclusion to the species as it's listed. So right now, that's worldwide. But if the West Atlantic population of loggerheads were listed as a DPS, we would have to make a jeopardy conclusion for that particular distinct population segment. Now, and there is, you know, quite a range in how loggerheads are doing around the world. And in particular, loggerheads and leatherbacks in the Pacific are, for the most part, doing much worse than they are in the West Atlantic. So there is quite a difference in how they're doing in certain places that may or may not be because they're a separate, you know, separate species and completely isolated from one another. But so
that's helpful. Again, not having the benefit of seeing the petition, but hypothetically, if the Northwest Atlantic was designated, does that include the Gulf? I mean, I know what my definition of the Northwest Atlantic would be, but I mean, does this mean that the Gulf and whatever happens in the Gulf of Mexico with loggerheads would be separate and different than what happens in the Northwest Atlantic?
Again, the and because the Northwest Atlantic, let's say again, if it were listed, if this happened, there's also the potential, I mean, because loggerheads they do migrate quite a bit. We would have to look and see anywhere where our fisheries operate, do they impact one of these DPSs? So if fisheries operate in the Gulf of Mexico, loggerheads from the East Coast that nest on the East Coast of Florida, and they definitely go into the Gulf of Mexico. So you'd have to look at our actions wherever they affect the species, and if the species ranges to another, you know, into the Gulf of Mexico, for sure, you'd have to look at the impacts to it. But I'm not quite sure of how the biological review team is looking at breaking up the worldwide population into distinct population segments. So I really couldn't give you the exact borders for everything. So, but if regardless though, fisheries in the Gulf of Mexico, if they are interacting with any of the listed DPSs, we would have to analyze that impact. So, but again, I'm not totally sure where the lines are that they're looking at. So.
Okay. I can understand the trying to make a distinction between the Pacific and the Atlantic. I mean, I don't think there's a lot of evidence of the turtles taking the canal, right? But I'll just leave it at that.
Unless they're in a boat, yeah.
Anyone else in the council? David?
Yeah, I don't want to beat this to death. I'm too tired. But, I mean, why does the Endangered Species Act have a different definition of a species than biology has definition of species? You know, if they can't interbreed, that to me is a definition of a species. I can understand the Pacific and the Atlantic being separate species. It's kind of tough to get around the, you know, Cape Horn. If you're a turtle, it's kind of frosty down there. But, you know, just because they occur in different parts of the Atlantic, if there's no reason they can't interbreed, and indeed they migrate back and forth through different areas, how is this some artifact of the law? Or that's my question.
I wonder about how turtles are included under the definition of fish for the Mangsanac sometimes. But yeah, but I mean it's the. I'm not sure I completely understand your question. Is about the Endangered Species Act does allow the if you want to call it the breaking up of a species into these distinct population segments, and when they're done, then you treat them as they get the same treatment as a species under the Act. So it is not the same as a true biological species definition. Yes, it's meant to address how we can best conserve and recover these species, because they may have special under specific threats and specific areas and things like that. So it is an artifact of the Act to some degree, because that's how it defines it. So
it's in the law. Ron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolitz, Fishery Survival Fund. How is the council going to deal with this issue? Is the council going to provide comments on this scoping document?
We can. When I was done with all the questions, that was going to be my question to the
council. Okay. And because up to now, turtles are going to become dominant in all the fisheries. They're gillnets, hooks, trawls, throughout the range. Right now, we're just dealing with it in the scallop plan. And in the next framework, for example, we're going to have to develop some sort of measures. And I think the council is going to have to figure out how to deal with turtles. I hate this, especially in an ecosystem approach. There's, in my terminology, I believe the NIMS strategy is fatally flawed, and I know Paul likes that. And I would like a way to discuss that with the council, so that I think there's a lot of problems with their strategy, and the council should be commenting on that. And I'd certainly like the opportunity somewhere to be able to at least briefly describe what I think the major problems are. I'll probably describe some of them tonight in the scoping hearing, but I think the council should weigh in on it a little bit more powerful than my comments. Thank you.
Thanks, Ron. Any other questions from the council? Any comments? Okay. What do you want to do with this? Simple as that. We have the opportunity here to provide our comments. What is the deadline for comments?
It's July 10th. I will say that the Mid-Atlantic Council submitted a request to have that deadline extended by 30 days. So I'm not sure what, and that was to have their protected resources subcommittee, I'm not sure what it's called, put together some comments. So that we did receive that request from the Mid-Atlantic. So there's the possibility that it could be extended.
I think I've captured a lot of the concerns or questions that have been raised, and I can ask staff to put a letter together illustrating some of those concerns. That would be one course of action we could take. David?
Oh, I would certainly suggest that. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind, and I'm still not sure, that there was an option there that went all the way to the Maine border.
Yeah.
Canadian border.
Yeah.
So
basically,
we're
the
talking about loggerheads
US
with long underwear. I mean, that would be my first comment, is I've never seen a loggerhead wearing long underwear. I mean, how far do we have to go here? And once in, after a hurricane, maybe once every 50 years, a loggerhead gets blown off course and ends up in the Gulf of Maine. Is that, under the Endangered Species Act, is that an issue we have to be concerned with?
It's also not just loggerheads. So it's leatherback sea turtles as well, which are prevalent and all the way up through Nova Scotia. So it's not just loggerheads. That's the species that we have some of the better estimates of takes in different fisheries, but it's for all the sea turtle species. So not just loggerheads.
Well, I'll submit that I've fished in the Gulf of Maine pretty near continuously every day you can be on it since 1967. I've seen one sea turtle in the Gulf of Maine. That's about as rare an event as you can get. You know, those are the kinds of comments I think we ought to make, that there has to be some kind of a cost-benefit, common-sense approach to this situation. You know, if there are, in fact, it appears that there are a few fisheries towards the southern end of the southern New England area that may have some marginal impact on populations, have takes under the definition. That seems to me to be very different than the fact that it is theoretically possible for an animal to get into a place at some given time, and therefore we got to take a whole host of actions. I mean, those would be the kinds of comments I would want to make. I would certainly love to comment on the whole concept of the Endangered Species Act, but that's probably outside the scope of what you want to do, you know, here. Those comments might be better off sent to Congress.
I was going to say, David, this is a scoping. This is when you scope to say, you know, the service is considering an amendment or an action under the Endangered Species Act, this is what they're considering. So I would draft a letter that basically says we are concerned about this, and that. I really can't say that the council, without any votes, what specific action we want to take, nor do I think that's really appropriate under scoping. That might come later. But I think I have enough about our concerns about, you know, spatial enclosures and TEDs and things like that.
Yeah, I agree. I think based on the questions that have been asked, you have a pretty lengthy the questions are concerns, basically. So based on the questions asked, you have a pretty good list of concerns.
Mary Beth.
Yeah, and one of the things that they're asking in scoping is, you know, whether to apply it to all trawl fisheries versus the phased approach, and if they're going to do the phased approach, maybe just starting with phase one. And I wonder if we couldn't recommend that they consider, you know, not moving beyond fisheries that have had observed takes. I mean, there are fisheries on the list that have no observed takes. I don't know if that would be appropriate.
Anyone else on the council? Dr. Pierce.
I'll follow up on a point I made earlier on. Once a final product is ready to be aired at public hearing, I think it would be useful. I know it would be useful for us to see the data that go along with that support the concern regarding take of these different species of turtles in these different fisheries by gear type. And that'll be helpful just to give us a better feel for, you know, where the problem may be. For example, I'd like to know where, on average, these 24 in the Northeast Skate Complex, the annual estimate of the loggerhead bycatch is 24. Wonder where they are. Are they isolated in certain areas at certain times so that there could be some more, you know, precision used to target specific gear types to address turtle bycatch? Just bring the database forward in figure form so we can look at it.
Anyone else on the council? Okay. Well, thanks, Pat. As you said, the next step, we'll see a proposal from you 2010 sometime?
Yeah. Again, we're going to have to take what we get in scoping, develop full alternatives for analysis, choose a preferred alternative, put together the EIS and propose rule. And so it's we're hoping for, you know, sometime in 2010. And I'd like to thank the council for having us here today and also for letting us use the room and everything for the scoping meeting tonight. So thank you.
Don't forget Dave's database.
It's a big database.
Thank you. So you have a public hearing tonight in this room at 7 p.m.?
Yep, 7 to 9 or whenever we go. Yep. So.
Okay. That's it for business today for the council. Tomorrow, we start at 8 a.m. Groundfish. See you tomorrow.